Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here tonight with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society.
And a guest.
We have a delightful guest today, this evening.
I think you probably nailed that.
Yeah, I think so too.
So.
What do you think about the adjective I used? Special guest here.
Fine.
Well, it's fine.
Sounds good.
I've been making fun of her because every guest, she says a special guest. And I said, well, you just keep using the same adjective. So delightful, I kind of like.
There we go.
I think that's going to be good. And this is like a long string of guests that we've had. This is great.
Is. Yes, Vince Huntington is who's joining us today. And we're going to learn about his history and what exactly brought him to the North Oregon coast.
Sweet. Yeah. And I have to say, I've missed all of the heat.
Ooh.
I was away in New Mexico.
Where it's also...
We're usually it's kind of hot, and we had a few days and then it rained, and everybody there just said, oh, you brought the Oregon rain. So I apologize to all Oregonians that apparently the heat wave and lack of rain was because of me.
Yes.
It followed me to New Mexico. They were all happy. They liked having the rain.
It was probably a little warm in the Flavel house. Did anyone take a temperature gauge?
The funny thing, everybody, all the visitors to the museums thanked us for having air conditioning.
Oh. Because they're so large.
And we said we have no air conditioning, but it felt like because it was so hot outside.
Oh, funny.
And the buildings didn't quite take the heat and kept a little bit of the coolness.
There we go.
So apparently everybody thinks now the Flavel House is air conditioned.
Yeah, well, Captain George had it built well.
Huh? We did not do anything to dispel that notion.
Of course.
All right, but we got to guess nothing to plug.
Yes. No.
Although plugging time is coming up soon.
It is. There are so many events that are just about to happen this summer. So.
Things are getting back to normal.
They are.
Okay. But this day in history, to appear smart to your friends or icebreakers or whatever you want to do with these are things that happen tomorrow, July 12th, 1776. Captain James Cook departs on his ship, the Resolution, for his third trip to the Pacific Ocean.
Mm.
I wonder how that turned out for him. Not so well.
The Resolution.
Okay. 1804. This one I put on only for you. Former 1804, former U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton, dies after being shot in a pistol duel by Vice President Aaron Burr. Because you like the musical, Hamilton.
I do.
And I still refuse to see it. 1861, Wild Bill Hickok's first gunfight.
Ooh.
Because you know I love the Wild West stuff.
Well, yes. And I was in Annie Get Your Gun. Wild Bill is in Annie Get Your Gun.
Oh, and did they portray him right? He had kind of a high, squeaky voice.
Oh, no.
That's one of the reasons he got into fights, because people made fun of him.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And this one, he was actually working in Nebraska at the Rock Creek Station, which had been a Pony Express station. And there was a guy that lived nearby named McCandless.
Huh.
And he called him Duck Bill and used to kind of pick on him because he was young. He was like 24 at this point. And called into question his sexuality, shall we say, and to get even while Bill Hickok had an affair with his wife.
Ooh.
Or girlfriend.
Well, there you go.
And then one day he and two other guys show up and says, I'm going to whoop you. And while Bill Hickok says, if you try that, there's going to be one less son of a bad word in this world. And then they shoot it out.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway, 1862, the Medal of Honor is created.
Okay.
1933, Congress passes the first minimum wage law.
Oh.
33 cents an hour. And I don't really know. I can't picture if that's really a good salary or not.
Oh, I don't know.
Let's see. 1957, Eisenhower takes the first presidential ride in a helicopter.
Ooh, fun. Where did he go?
I don't know. I didn't dig deeper into that one. I thought about it. 1976, top five answers are on the board. Family Feud, hosted by Richard Dawson, debuts on ABC.
How fun.
Survey says. Okay, survey says, why is he kissing everybody?
Oh, I don't...
Even back then, as a kid watching it, I was uncomfortable. How touchy he and kissy he was with everybody. Anyway, okay.
Body boundaries exist for a reason.
Yes, exactly. Respect my cheek and my lips. Don't. Especially you, Richard Dawson. 1984. This is almost going to be my history highlight of the day. Geraldine Ferraro is named the vice presidential candidate.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah.
But our history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact on history, 1909. The 16th Amendment was passed by Congress. And I should say nothing else and make everybody look it up. Because don't you carry a pocket constitution with you everywhere you
right.
go?
Right.
I used to. The 16th Amendment, of course, gives the power to tax incomes.
Ooh, there you go. That is important. So
it had a big impact.
Yep.
And if anybody wants to deny it.
Yeah.
You tell me. You don't mind filling out your tax forms.
Taxes go up.
So what did I miss?
You got the highlight, that's for sure. But 1957, U.S. Surgeon General Leroy Birney reports there is a direct link between smoking and lung cancer. And this is something my six-year-old daughter points out to everyone who has a cigarette. Do you know that that can make you die? Is what she said to our neighbor.
Nice.
And then 1974, G. Gordon Liddy, John Ehrlichman, and two others are convicted of conspiracy and perjury in connection with the Watergate scandal.
Ah, there we go.
Other important highlights of the day.
The cigarette one always makes me laugh that, you know, we don't advertise to kids and there's no link. And then some days you just got to admit it finally.
Right. Well, my God, my daughter got it. So that's good.
That's funny. And the beautiful thing, kids just say what they think.
They do. They do. And she is genuinely concerned. I mean, once she learned that it was not a good thing, she doesn't understand why someone would choose to do it.
Yes.
So it's good.
That's great.
No good transition there to our guest.
Well, see, I thought maybe you were working on one.
Well, our guest does have a background in healthcare.
Well, that's why I was thinking.
So he too could probably share...
So let's ask you conclusively, is there a link between cigarette smoking and cancer and death?
Absolutely.
Yep. See, there we go.
There's our transition.
Well, Vince does come with a background. He was a chief exec and a chief operating officer in Montana and Alaska for Providence. But what brought you here?
Well, I'd spent most of my working career in healthcare. I started out as a physical therapist and worked in Montana for a number of years and then transitioned into some administrative roles, kind of bounced back and forth between clinical work and management. And through a variety of just happenstance things, I ended up in several administrative roles and got involved with a lot of construction of healthcare facilities and eventually was recruited to Alaska, to Providence, Alaska Medical Center to manage their facilities development back in 1998. And so I did that for 8 years. And Alaska is a long ways away, you know, from the continental United States. You see it on the weather map in a kind of a strange location down in the southeast. And on the weather map, it looks strange. But any rate, we had all of our family and everything still down in this area. And I was at a point to transition out of kind of a management role and wanted to work a few more years. And I hadn't actually worked clinically in physical therapy for, oh gosh, almost 18 or 20 years. And but I kept up with continuing education and continued to have my license and worked. And So when we left Alaska, I wasn't quite sure where I wanted to live. We lived in a lot of different places in that time. And I had always kind of wanted to come to Oregon. My dad, when he was very young, like when he was 8 or 10 years old, their family actually moved for a couple of years to Grants Pass. And all my life, I had heard him talk about how much he enjoyed living in Oregon during those childhood years and wished that he could kind of move back to that area. So we came and visited Oregon, and I really liked it and started looking for some opportunities here. And there was a physical therapy job at Seaside, Providence Seaside Hospital. So I came down and visited with the managers and talked with the other therapists, and they all agreed that they would kind of help me work and transition back, you know, into the field. And they were wonderful. It's our rehab team is just outstanding and just really nice folks. And so I joined the team and pretty much covered the hospital for 4 years as a staff physical therapist, which is kind of different after being a chief executive of a 400-bed facility with 3,000 employees to suddenly sort of find yourself as a staff. But I really enjoyed it, and it was a very good experience for me. So
if you had to choose, which aspect of it do you prefer? Did you like better?
That's good.
Well, it was all good. It was all exciting and interesting. I really did enjoy, I would have to say that I always loved every day that I spent clinically working with patients. And from the time I started until I retired, I really enjoyed that aspect of it. But I also enjoyed the aspect of the planning and the development and the challenges of logistics of managing construction projects and working with facilities. And I always enjoyed having sort of the clinical knowledge to interact with the hospital staff. And so I always enjoyed being able to get up on the floor and do rounds and talk with the folks. Mm-hmm. And so I enjoyed all of it. There's parts of management that aren't very fun, and after a while, you get tired of that. And when I was just, you know, in my early 60s, it was like, you know, I'd like to do something that's a little less stressful. So
where did you grow up, and how different was that from Alaska?
Well, I grew up in Montana, and my family background is with that were early homesteaders back in the late 1800s in the early days of homesteading in Montana. And so I grew up in that environment and went to school and college in Montana, worked in the summers in Yellowstone Park, and met my wife there. Oh. And so we had good experiences in Montana. We lived in other places too. I went to school in Minnesota at the Mayo Clinic and for physical therapy. That was an interesting experience. We lived in Michigan for a few years. We also lived in Idaho for a few years. So we had a lot of different experiences. I always really liked Montana growing up. But when we moved to Alaska, that is such an exciting and fun place to live. You just experience things there that you don't experience other places. Mm-hmm. And we had a very good experience there. We were there for 8 years. And so I would have a hard time choosing. But when it came time to decide where to kind of stay after living in Oregon for 2 years, it was like, I want to stay here. Mm-hmm. I really like the North Coast a lot.
It grows on you.
It does. I love that story, though, of going from administrative to back to staff, because I think it gave you a good perspective, because you then stepped into a volunteer role with the board, where you now have you have both of those perspectives,
right,
for Seaside.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting in that sense that my first job as an administrator was in a really small Montana rural hospital, like a 10-bed hospital, 13-bed nursing home, very small. And back then, you know, you did it all. You know, I helped with the maintenance department. I sometimes threw a load of laundry in the washing machine. I shoveled snow in the winter. You know, we helped develop the diet plans for the cafeteria, for the food service. And having done that and then covered just about every aspect of administration, including nursing home administration. I had a nursing home administrator license in and did that. When I was with Providence here, I did some home health and physical therapy. So it's like having done all of those aspects of it, and now at the board level, both the local advisory council for the hospital here and then on the Oregon Regional Board, I sort of have a perspective of from top to bottom, and it's been very interesting. I've been very fortunate to have those opportunities.
You've got to be one of the best, well-rounded board members that you've ever had, that you have experienced all those things.
Yeah, I don't know that it makes that much difference on the board, other than when they talk about stuff, I pretty much understand everything that they're talking about. But yeah, it's been good.
How have you noticed healthcare evolve from your time, from truly when you started and what you maybe even you envisioned it to be, to what it turned out to be, to what it is now?
Yeah, the transition is just mind-boggling. As an example, back in the small hospital that I started at, that was a hospital that financially was in not very good shape when I was there. And they were still back reusing hypodermic needles. They were sterilizing their own water and saline solutions. They were repackaging their own gauze sponges that they used in surgery. And the equipment, you know, was the old X-ray machines where they had the tanks that they were dipping the films in and stuff. You know, it was very, very primitive stuff. I graduated from physical therapy school in 1969, and Medicare had just been passed in 1966. And so it was in the very early stages of transitioning from before Medicare to after Medicare. And in the early days of Medicare, as they were developing sort of the administrative protocols and regulations and stuff, it was pretty loose, and there was a lot of abuse of it, and so that's when they began to develop regulations and standards. Prior to that, it was really just everybody doing their own thing. There was no standard way of doing anything. There was just a very wide spectrum of practices. And so having watched now this whole evolution of the regulation all the way to the development of the Affordable Care Act and dealing with the financial aspects of that, and then the technology, as of course we all understand what the difference in technology is. When I was an assistant administrator in Idaho Falls back in the mid-80s, I used to carry a pocket full of quarters with me and my pager, so that if I got paged when I was on call, I could drive somewhere and find a phone booth to get in and plug it with quarters so I could call back and see what the emergency was. And I remember seeing the first cell phone at that point. So it's totally different now.
You know, I love your description of what you encountered when you first started. We grimace and make faces, and yet that was so light years ahead of, you know, the Civil War era or 1700s, and they would have thought that was all a miracle, and now we look back and just, you know, just grimace.
Yes.
Wonder what it'll be in 30 years or 50 years from now.
My mother was a nurse, and she practiced in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and even in the late 50s, I can remember that she was in the small hospital in Montana. She was like the only RN on, and there would be an LPN and a couple of aides. But she was it, and she did everything there. She was the emergency room nurse. She was the OB nurse. She provided anesthetic if they had a surgery that came in. She did labs. She took X-rays at that point. It was everything, you know. And it's so different now because everything's so highly specialized. And so, yeah, it's been a tremendous transition from the 50s to now. But I forget that how long that's been a long time.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is kind of interesting just to think about what will happen next. What do you think could happen next?
Well, I think the technology is going to continue to amaze us, and I think we're going to see increasingly more telehealth type of stuff. The technology is going to take us there. So I think that we're going to be largely driven by technology. I think that inpatient care is going to be fairly minimal. Everything's going to be much more ambulatory. And
can physical therapy be done, do you think, through telehealth? Or is that something that you've got to kind of be there? And
I think there's some aspects of it that might be able to be done by telehealth. But I think that is going to continue to be one of the hands-on things that will be around for a long. And I think that will always be around. There's really not any substitute that you can get to help get somebody up and get them walking again. Mm-hmm. You just have to be there and help them to do that, or to move their joints through a range of motion. Mm-hmm. You know,
that was the horrible image that I had when you said telehealth. I thought, okay, you know, if it's just, you need to, I want to see you rotate your shoulder or bend the knee, but get up and walk, and then you're on a TV screen, so you see the person fall, you can't help them, you know, steady them. So.
But I do think that people that are given exercises and put on a home exercise program to continue at home, instead of coming back every 3 days or a week for, you know, to be followed up on that, a lot of that follow-up stuff actually could probably happen on a telehealth where they would do it at home and be observed doing it by a physical therapist. But.
Sure.
And it actually did. I know that both hospitals this prior year during COVID were both given permission to do telehealth, because it does come down to billing too, right? So you have to get permission from your payer to do it. And it was approved because, yes, there are aspects of physical therapy that you can do. And what we saw in healthcare was that people were foregoing appointments because they were intimidated or afraid to go out, right? They didn't want to go be around other people at that time, especially in a healthcare setting, even if it is very sanitary. It can be done.
I think the other major thing is there's a much better understanding, realization of the social implications of healthcare today and what the social impacts of everything from, you know, homelessness to food insecurity to mental health issues and what the aspects of that are in healthcare. And I think as they understand that and begin to work on trying to address some of those things upstream and look at more trying to create healthier communities instead of trying to treat them after the fact, I think that's going to continue to be an important trend.
The man makes his own transitions.
I know.
From healthier and more pleasant communities. And you work towards making communities a little better by some of your nonprofit work that you've been involved in.
Yeah, it's been I really have enjoyed working with the food pantries. That's such a wonderful program, and I can't speak too highly, too much how impressed I've been with the CCA, Clatsop Community Action Program. They have just done fabulous things in the community. So I've enjoyed doing that. And had an opportunity to work with the North Coast Land Conservancy a little bit, which is also a fabulous program. It's preserving our environment and, for our future, we'll have wonderful places that are not impacted as much. So
what have you done with them? Because I don't know that we've ever really discussed North Land Conservancy on the show.
Future guests.
Yeah.
There we go.
Well, I've done a couple of things. One is out at Circle Creek, which is one of their properties outside of Seaside, which is a wonderful preserved area that people can go out and walk around in the meadows and through the trees and stuff. And I've worked with them on that, doing invasive species control. And I've been a land steward for a piece of property that's out by Clutchy Creek that we just go out and monitor the land and make sure that it's not being impacted adversely in any way. And so I've done work with that, worked on the trails committee, helped develop some trails and stuff like that. So just being able to get out. But the best part is the people. that you associate with, that are people that you have things in interest in common with, and being able to spend an afternoon, you know, out grubbing in the dirt, and it just doesn't get any better.
So in an Astorian article I read that featured you, it talked about your volunteer service with the North Coast Land Conservancy, and it said you and another person were land stewards, which sounds so professional.
I like that.
But you actually, your job was to pull one specific weed, and you pulled like thousands of them over a period of time. Was this at the Circle Creek property?
They've been pulling a lot of policeman's helmet stuff at Circle Creek, and then we've been fighting a Japanese knotweed out in our Nakanikum Forest properties that we're land stewards of. Yeah, we've pulled a lot of weeds, but it feels good to do that.
Yeah, it's good for your health. But I mean,
the weed guy. So what are those two plants, and what do they look like that we should identify?
Policeman's helmet, it grows fairly tall, and it's got kind of an interesting stalk on it. And it has the flower on it, tends to look like a policeman's helmet, maybe a British policeman helmet sort of thing. Japanese knotweed you see in various places, and it also is almost like a bamboo shoot type of thing, but it is extremely invasive. Wherever any part of it, a stem, a root, a leaf, or anything falls, it has the potential to grow new plants there. So once you pull that, you have to carry it out and keep it away. And it has both runners under the ground as well as some species of it then also develop a lot of seeds and stuff. The ones in Oregon so far are mostly sterile. They're mostly, I think it's a female species, and they haven't got the counterpart to spread by seeds, but they're extremely invasive with just particles. So they tend to develop along streams, and they get in the water, and then wherever they land on the banks of the streams and stuff. But they grow really, really thick, and can just crowd out all kinds of other local native species that you want. So
if somebody wanted to get involved in either one of these nonprofits that you're involved in, how would they do that?
Well, just contact either one of the ones, any of the food pantries, and there's a number of food pantries around. Would always enjoy having more help. And the North Coast Land Conservancy has a wonderful website, and just go to that website. And there's plenty of information in there about them and all the wonderful things that they're doing, and how to get involved as a volunteer.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being a steward of our health and our environment.
Indeed.
We appreciate it.
All right. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society, and brought to you by KMUN.